of taking an error than if the sentence was already irreconcilable. So that all that seed of promise is back there, and there's only ample B for that period of time, say the first 1,000 years. It's just using it in the right. But we don't go back and measure, well, how many years did this come in? And then you find you multiply the 1,000 by 1.75 and come to a certain state, and then you go to the next state. This is really giving us the climax of history that's leading up to. It's that 7,000 year mark that's the climax of this vision as far as the measurement takes place. And it shows that this is a progressive picture until it will be fulfilled at the completion of the millennium and God's purpose is accomplished where the waters of truth will cover the earth as the waters cover the sea. And it confirms that it's the 21 and 2. Because when you do it into the others, it does work again.
Many ways, there's many ways, some from a mathematical method, some from a knowledge of it, of the 18th cubit. It tells you that the 18th, when you look in the Bible dictionary, you have all kinds of, you can have 10 Bible dictionaries and look up the cubit, and you might get 10 different answers. I mean, that's how varied it is, the subject.
But there are some who recognize the 18th cubit among the five stars. And that's based on the word cubit, which is from the point of the elbow to the end of the longest finger. From the tip of one to the other, if you put a ruler down, mine is almost perfect. It varies slightly. And this is only a rule of thumb or rule of arm measure from a practical standpoint, in general terms, like we use the pace. With 5 yards and so forth, the double step, that's measured all 5 yards. Or 5 feet, that is. I wouldn't, just from the principle of the vision. There's a tendency to overread, and there's a tendency to underread prophecy. And in overreading prophecy, you get into problems. I'm not speaking just the measure. But in other ways, you see that the setting is here, it ends there with this startling fact that he couldn't fathom the bottom of that river when it reached the 4,000 cubit mark, and that this is the outstanding thing, and that it was progressive. And when he mentioned 1,000 cubits, it's really emphasizing the leading up to that 4,000 cubits, just leading up to it. It's not meant to be units, like 1,000 is one unit. It's like not like ages of equal length. Four different ages of equal length, that is the point.
You can
that's very easy to do, but the hand's breadth is the four fingers' breadth, which is, and each finger is 3/4 of an inch. Of course, you look at your fingers, they vary in width, but the average width is 3/4. 3 and 4 times 3/4 is 3 inches. When it says hand breadth, it doesn't say palm breadth. See, this is how you read. This is what I'm saying, you have to mathematically reason this out, which most people don't do, even the scholars don't do it. But there's a difference between hand breadth and palm breadth. The palm breadth is the fact of the hand. And that's 4 inches. If the palm breadth is the 4 inch, the 4 digits is the 3 inch. Now, when you play marbles in the old days, and you didn't have a ruler, and you're playing to see which one goes next, the one that's nearest, and you know where the center is, and you haven't got a ruler, what do? They use the span. The boys used to go with the span and measure, and then when it was half a span or so, then they begin to use their fingers to measure it off. And you go like this, and now you measure. And then you find this way which one's closest. And this is a very practical method, because you can find out which it is. Unless it's the 64th of an inch, but it would have to be mighty fine. So this is the way that this is done. So you have the 18-inch cubit, which is from the word cubitus, from the point of the elbow to this fourth, and you get 18 inches plus 3 inches is 21 inches. Then there's another way of measuring it. Since the cubit of the tabernacle is 18, it's 3 times 6. And the multiple is 6 in the tabernacle. Of the small unit, not the big unit. The small units and big, like the pyramid. You have the pyramid inch, you have the pyramid cubit. And in the Ezekiel's temple, you have a cubit. You have it measured there. See? But you have also the reed. It mentions the reed. These are the ones that mentioned. But in describing this cubit, it says that it's one palm, one hand breadth. Not palm, a hand breadth. Longer than the normal cubit of the tabernacle or Solomon's temple. Doesn't matter, both are the same, 18 inches. Therefore, you have to know it's 18 inches plus the hand breadth, this is 21 inches. Now, 21 inches divisible by 7. The number 7 is the number of perfection. And the number 6 is a holy number. Not just because 666, that doesn't mean just the devil. 6 is a holy number. Many places in the Bible, but it's this side of the veil. It's in the present life, not in the future. It's not the complete picture. It's during the age of sin. That doesn't mean the people are counted as sinners. They could be justified people. Depends what you're talking about. Whether you're talking about Satan or talking about Jesus. Or the tabernacle, or it depends what the subject is as to how you apply the 6. The 6 is a holy number in many places in the Bible. And here is the tabernacle is the picture of the temple, of the tabernacle in the present life. Solomon's temple is the temple class which was sullied, became impure in the present life. But Ezekiel's temple is the temple of the future in the future. Not the temple of the future class now. So sometimes the Bible speaks of a person perspective sense, and sometimes it's always the final picture when it's actually in the present life. But there is the reality of the present, of future life, and that's the Ezekiel. That's the multiple of 7, the perfection, the finish, and that's the last temple. You had the tabernacle, Solomon's temple, tabernacle, Solomon's temple, Zerubbabel's temple. Then you had one squeezed in there, Herod's. Then you have the, which is not, the measurements are not in the Bible. And then you come to Ezekiel's temple, which is the grand plan. Then you have the pyramid, which is a multiple of 5 squared. The pyramid is 5, the tabernacle is 6, the temple is 7. Israel will one day come into God's favor again in a pronounced way, These are all literal promises, and they're good promises, and they're. But the thing is, you appreciate both the spiritual and the natural, or both to be considered in order to get a fuller perspective of various things. Now we're back to this third verse where the man, now who was this man that had the line in his hand? That's right, see the man in limp. The one he saw at the gate that had clothing, like looked like grass. Copper, he had a line of flax in his hand, and a plummet, and a measuring reed. I'm combining a few pictures. But when Ezekiel first came to the temple, he saw this man at the gateway, and he was taken on this tour. That would be the work of Pastor Russell in showing the requirements of the spiritual temple class. The measurements means the standards that have to be met if one is to be a member of this royal priesthood. Certain qualifications are necessary. That's from the spiritual significance of the vision in one sense of the word. And Ezekiel is seeing these things in advance. But when the building is operating, then that man's forgotten. Pastor Russell is nothing then. Then it's the Lord. It's the ancient worthy and all the others, because it's now, it's a picture and completely, this is the fulfillment. What we're studying is the prophetic aspect. Then that man becomes very important, because we're living in an age of that time. But in the kingdom, the apostles are going to have more honor than Pastor Russell. And in the kingdom down here, David, Moses are going to be very prominent characters. They won't be thinking of these others. It's a different age, a different purpose, and it's appealing to another class. And this temple is primarily designed for the world. And we're back to the third verse. Why did he use a line? Why didn't he use the measuring tape? He said he had a line in his hand. What's another way of saying, what would a line correspond to today? A tape measure, ruler. The kind that's like a tape. And of course, how did Ezekiel know it was a 1,000 cubits? When he had this line and he probably like the widow's cruse. You have it only a little line that seemed to be rather small, but when he kept stretching it, it's just interminably long because this is over a mile. Oh, yeah. Well, this is a vision. So the purpose of it. It's just stretched. But when he was seeing the vision, see with this tape measure, he's going along, and it doesn't show the inches. It doesn't show the inches and feet. What it would do, all of a sudden he sees the 1,000. He sees a flag on it that says 1,000 cubits. Then he knows what he measured there, and then he says, come here, he practices him, and come with me, and he walks across the stream. And then walking across the stream at that level, maybe he can put a peg in the ground. He might put a mark in the ground, 1,000 cubits, just. But now he leads him across the stream, and he's conscious of the fact that the water at that distance was angled in. Then he goes, and then the next mark, he comes out 2,000 cubits. And he knows this is another 1,000, see? And then he goes through this thing, his experience, but the water's now getting deeper, a little wider, deeper, a little wider, until he comes to the water. And this is the way I reason on prophets, because it makes you so that you can remember it. Where if you just read words, you can't retain them. You forget them. And this is no doubt the way it happened. Because how did Ezekiel know it was about to do? He had to see something. Or hear a voice saying about you, but it'd be better if he saw it. Because if he heard that, it would be very pronounced. And he would see you connected with the line. It's the line that is the measure, rather than the voice. So on this line, there was some sort of indication that he had reached to these points. Now, another thing. This is a vision seen in advance of which this man conducts the tour. actually, this temple will literally be built someday. It becomes broader and deeper and more rapid as you advance. Where is it going? What direction? Toward the Dead Sea. We find out later that this stream, he tells us later that the stream ended up in the Dead Sea. And then he notices that the Dead Sea have a lot of fish in it now. There are no fish in the Dead Sea now. In the sea itself. The instant they touch that water, they're gone. I mean, because they're in fresh water. The change from fresh. The far as they can get now is that the upper stream is fresh water that goes into the Dead Sea. At what would have been an eglin. It's called another name now, it just puts my mind just for a moment. They're not Engedi. Engedi is one stream, and this other one's from one further north, near the scrolls, Dead Sea Scroll Gate. There you have some fish even, but they don't get to the Dead Sea. They're before that water really empties out into the main body of the Dead Sea. But in this case, it does dilute the saline water, where this water comes out, so that fish now can enter into the Dead Sea and swim around and live. And this is going to be literally fulfilled in the future, and it has a symbolic meaning in that the river of life will bring life to the Dead Sea of mankind. The Dead Sea is the world of mankind, dead in their sins and presence.
Now
we're coming. Yes, the reason I'm not going pursuing it is that we haven't come to that chapter yet, which is yesterday. All right, now we're back to the sixth verse. What time is it so we can pace this up? 20 after the verse. So take a little. Let's take two verses, Brother Russell, please.
And he said unto me, Son of man, hast thou seen this? Then he brought me, and caused me to return to the brink of the river. Now when I had returned, behold, at the bank of the river were very many trees on the one side and on the other.
All right. Now, when it says he returned to the brink of the river, where did he return from? Where was he? He's at 4,000, but where was it that he would return to the brink of the river? Yeah, he's in the river. He's floundering. He can't go. He can't cross. So the man, but he starts, all the other times he crossed the stream. This time he couldn't cross it. So now he had to return. And so he's caused to go back now to the bank. Now he gets the bank. Son of man, note what you've just seen. And now he says, Ezekiel looks around and he sees at this point, and where is he now? 4,000 marks, right? And he notes an abundance of trees and others on each side of this river. And now this will be literal too, in the sense of its fulfillment. There will be an abundance of trees by the side of this river which leads from the temple. But at that time, Ezekiel is not going to be taken with a man with inkhorn. And this is showing things that were granted to Ezekiel in vision of this river of the future in which there will be, but he's not going to cross the river at that time. This is an advanced preview of things to come. And so, what are these trees on either side? What does it remind you of? All right, now the Eden too. See, two things. Of the first book of the Bible and the last book of the Bible. You had the trees of life in Eden, and then in the book of Revelation there's paradise restored there too, restored, where it was paradise originally and now it's again, and the trees there of life. What are the trees a symbol of? All right, human nature, mankind. And to show that a tree is what it is?
Leaves.
All right, it has life,
leaves,
leaves and so forth. What are leaves? Picture up?
Trunk.
Professions. And what a fruit a picture of? The fruit of the Holy Spirit, character development. And what's a tree? What's the opposite of a tree in the usage in the Bible? Well, all right, that is in one sense, yes, the vine crawls along the earth. But in this sense, from a favorable sense, grass. The ordinary grass of the ground is a blade of grass, is the insignificant development, small development. A tree is a mature person, a person grown to a certain stature. Now, there's trees of evil. The wicked are as a green bay tree, but also the righteous are as a palm tree and other kinds of trees. So it means a character that's been developed, a developed matured. In this case, it would be of holy maturity, with this fruitage and abundance. Now, the world of mankind are going to be trees eventually. That's the objective, that they'll all be mature, that they'll all be kings. All the world of mankind, each one will be a noble man at the end of the kingdom. But before that happens, in order to bring it about, as he looks, he's looking back on that stream, and he notes not just where he's standing, that at his right and left side there are a few trees. He's looking back the course of that river and notes these trees. These trees represent them. The ancient word. It could represent the church from one aspect, in that the church will use the ancient worthies as guides in the earth, that they're their agents. The ancient worthies are the agents of the church in glory, and that the fruits of the Holy Spirit of the church class will be a benefaction to the world of mankind. And the instruction of the church in glory, the father and the mother, the priest, the prophet, king of that day, through these princes, their instruction, which are the leaves, the professions, but these professions are the instruction or emissions of words from the mouth, orally instructing the people what they're supposed to do. And the fruit is the character development, their character development, which will benefit them. So I'd say that the trees, first are the ancient words. Because it's the river is the church, the river of life in the more realistic sense, which comes from the throne of the temple, throne, represents the throne of God and of the Lamb and of the bride of church class in glory. It's on that platform. That platform is the kingdom of God in the high place. And then this water of life comes down to the world and begins to bless it. As it works its way down to the Dead Sea. So the trees are the instructors and mature individuals, the ancient worthies, which will be the guides. And the leaves, which they eat for medicine, says that these leaves have like an herbal or medicinal aspect. And these professions or instructions received from the mouth of the ancient worthies will benefit, will heal them of their disease. Just like in another case, the ashes of a heifer. In another, it's the ministry of this class from one standpoint, from another standpoint. Then eventually, what happens? The world becomes like the ancient worthies, because when they begin, when they grow up into perfection, aren't they going to be like the ancient worthies, perfect? And then, if they get beyond the millennium and enter into that age, those that are counted worthy to enter into that age, not the millennium, the age after the millennium, which will never die. Which will be as the angels, they, that class, will be just like the ancient worthies. They'll be perfect. Therefore, if the ancient worthies are going to get a better resurrection than the world of mankind, it must be that they have a spiritual change. So this picture of the pastor, where he saw that at the end of the millennium, that the ancient worthies would be rewarded. They that shine as stars will be, in that day, not as the sun. The sun is Jesus and the church, but the stars are the other prominent leaders down here, that they will be given a spiritual reward. as a result of their labor. And then they would have a better resurrection. Otherwise, they wouldn't. They would merely have, for a few years, a better resurrection. If the angel were to come forth perfect, and then the world of mankind becomes perfect, well, then the angel worthies are no more perfect than the others. And if the age is finished, if the 1,000 years are over, and there's no more need of instruction along those lines because every man now is their own king, well, they wouldn't have a better resurrection. They merely would have a little quicker resurrection, but not a better. Therefore, but if they get a spiritual change, once they're spiritually changed, then they would have, because the world of mankind will never go up to that next stage. And of course, there are about 8 different lines of reasoning to prove we feel pretty give strong evidence that they will get eventually a spiritual nature, a heavenly city, as they are promised. Just one other point. The 8th verse, just the point, Sister Albert.
Then said he unto me, these waters lead you out toward the east country, and go down into the desert, and go into the sea, which being brought forth into the sea, the water shall be healed.
Nine, all right.
And it shall come to pass that everything that liveth, which moveth, whithersoever the rivers shall come, shall live. And there shall be a very great multitude of fish, because these waters shall come thither. For they shall be healed, and everything shall live whither the river cometh.
Keep going. So this is all really the same.
And it shall come to pass that the fishers shall stand upon it from Engedi even unto Enegium.
Down to through verse 12.
They shall be a place to spread forth nets. Their fish shall be according to their kind, as the fish of the great sea, exceeding many. But the miry places thereof, and the marshes thereof, shall not be healed. They shall be given to salt. And by the river, upon the bank thereof, on this side and on that side, shall grow all trees for meat, whose leaves shall not fade, neither shall the fruit thereof be consumed. It shall bring forth new fruit according to his month, because their waters have issued out of the sanctuary, and the fruit thereof shall be for meat, and the leaves thereof for medicine.
All right, that's enough, because the next is a different picture. Geography, the next one. The part of the sea will be used for extraction of mineral salt. Given to salt, 11th verse. They shall be given. Therefore, when these waters come in and freshen the Dead Sea, so that there's a multitude of fish in the Dead Sea of the same variety and kind that's now resident in the Mediterranean Sea, well, how come that the miry part never are healed? How can you have like the water supporting a great abundance of fish and yet not developing to the point where the miry places become healed? What happens that causes that? The earthquake is going to help to give the river a push, but
maybe a part will be cut off.
You would have an outlet to the Dead Sea, for one thing. And that outlet would not be a gigantic one, because if it was too big, then and this water coming in, you wouldn't have the pockets quite that pronounced where you'd have the miry spots. You have two things. You have the climate at that level of the heat where it's evaporation. What happens now? The evaporation is so rapid and abundant, and there's no outlet, that the level of the Dead Sea remains constant. I'm just speaking in general terms, because of evaporation. But the water that evaporates leaves a mineral deposit, and that just gets more accumulation of mineral salt, and the water is terribly salty. But if you had an outlet, That's when it went out.
Ezekiel 47, verse 1. Afterward he brought me again unto the door of the house, and behold, waters issued out from under the threshold of the house eastward, for the forefront of the house stood toward the east, and the waters came down from under from the right side of the house at the south side of the altar.
The center of the table is, or it is the east. So here, the north would be to the left, when you have your back now to the Most Holy, your back is facing the Most Holy, and you're looking out the front. To the right is south, to the left is north. If you were on the Dome of the Rock and you looked out to the Mount of Olives, you'd be looking eastward. To the left is north toward Damascus, and to the right is south toward the Negev. Now, the warriors came down from the right side of the house. Now, this shows us that there was a little bit of elevation concern, because that platform has a little height. So therefore, it's not coming out from under the house at the court level, but in the midst of this platform. It comes out and drops. In other words, it's meant for observation purposes. By being slightly elevated, it's very easy to notice it. But if it's down on the level of the court, and you're in the court or outside the court, you'd be less apt to notice it. But in some ways, it's very conspicuous. Look at the house, and on the side there, here's this water coming out. It's like a small waterfall coming out of the structure. Now, the next thing it tells us, that it issues in the direction in which the house faces. It says that the forefront here is toward the east. But it's at the south side of the altar. Merely, it flows from west to east, and there's the altar right out in front of the house. There's the altar in front. And it continues then from the right side of the house to the right side of the altar. And then we find it goes outside on the right side too. In other words, it more or less follows a pretty straight line, relatively speaking. It stays on that one side, at least until it gets outside. Let us read one more verse. Sister Dawn. Now, why did he go to all this trouble? Why couldn't he just walk out the east gate? Why go around this circuitous route?
Because of the time that this water was flowing, that's why it was flowing.
Right. He can't get out the east gate. The outer east gate is locked, and that's where he really wants to go. So he has only two choices. And what are the two choices?
North
or south. Now, in this particular instance, he goes to the north gate. He goes left, outside the north inner gate. But then when he goes outside the north inner gate, what happens? Because he continues through. See, the way it describes it here, you get the wrong impression. What is this thing? Then he brought me out of the way of the gate north, showing that he continues through both gates, the north inner gate, the north outer gate. Because it's the way, it's a continue, rather than say, go into detail. He went out that direction. Then he made a circuit about the temple precinct, and he went around to the front of the structure to look at this water to see its disposition. And what does he say? It's still coming out, it's still staying on the right side. And what was the right side? South side. Alright, and where did it issue from, the water, originally? Where did it come from, originally? The west. From underneath the threshold of the house. And what is west? Alright, the back of the temple. What's at the back of the temple? What? But the Most Holy. And what's in the Most Holy? God, the Church, Christ, the Bride, the glorified Christ.
But that's the end of the building.
That's right, you can't go out. But the water, he doesn't see the water coming from the backside. He sees the water issuing out the front of the structure, but that would mean that the water came from underneath that structure from the west toward the east, and the west side of the temple, there's no exit. That's God's place of residence. He's in the most holy, and everything faces him. And the front of the house, therefore, you have to look to the west to look toward the direction of God. And so, therefore, the source is from heaven. It's from a glorified the church, the glorified Christ. And this harmonizes with another picture, a symbolic picture in the Bible. All right, would you read it or quote it in your own way?
Showed me a pure river of water of life, clear as crystal, proceeding out of the throne of God and the Lamb.
The spiritual significance of this vision corresponds to the spiritual vision of Revelation. However, Ezekiel is more comprehensive than even Revelation, because in addition to the spiritual significance, there's a literal application as well. And you can't confuse the literal, because in Revelation you have a monstrosity. When you have it describing the city, you would have a city that's just beyond all kinds of proportions. It's not meant to be literal at all, the holy city of Revelation. It's a real government, and it's a really Christ's kingdom, but it's speaking of it in spiritual terms. This is a literal structure that will be built in the future, but he's seeing this literal structure in vision. That doesn't mean that this Ezekiel's temple is just a vision. Moses saw the tabernacle in vision. Moses got an advanced picture of the tabernacle when he was in the mountain. And he saw all the details, and he's told later on, make it according to the pattern, shew thee in the mount. So Moses actually saw the whole tabernacle arrangement before one stick of wood was prepared. He had an advanced picture. So Ezekiel is here having an advanced experience of seeing this temple and all its appurtenances, and the structure hasn't even been built yet, just like Moses did. And why, even we are. We are even having this preview of this in the Bible. So those who appreciate this realize that this is an important vision, and it's a blessing to even have the small interpretation or knowledge of it that we have. We should be appreciative of. Right. Yes?
You were finding that the second verse where it says the outer gates, that's the outer gates, structure. But then he goes around for the east side.
He goes around the corner
to the right side. Of the
that's right.
Oh, I thought you meant he went around the back of the building.
No. And then he sees that the water has continued the same direction and is emitted from the structure. Pours forth on the same side, on the right side, or the... Yes, sir.
Yeah.
That's the rock is the dome of the rock.
I know.
That's the altar. That would correspond to the altar.
Where would that rock be?
That rock would be the altar. And back on the back side there, where you that structure that you see today, they have all restrooms and all sort of things there now. That would be the temple that would occupy that. And the back part there would be blocked from usage. And it wouldn't be used for that purpose at all. The Ezekiel's temple, the whole arrangement of the lavatories and all is quite different. Most people don't even think of the lavatories, but they're there. They're actually, there's room for them in the structure. And you're pointed to it in very direct terms by indirect line of reasoning, which is going to be just as powerful as direct reasoning. If you have all the links, like a crossword puzzle. If you put all the pieces of a crossword puzzle together and there's only one piece left, and you know the shape of it from the whole, and all the other parts is by experience, so that other part, say, it may be missing, but you know what that part is. You know all the measurements of it. Even though it's not there, it's not material. Jigsaw puzzle. Yeah, what did I say? Crossword. Oh, right. Well, this is a word puzzle, right? Pardon me. I'm so interested in the just the principle of what they call indirect reasoning. You can reason from the known and understand considerable about the unknown, long as each link is accurately done. And that you have also a final picture in which you can back out the known amounts, leaving the unknown, which can be then described. Now let's see where we're at this part. So the water originates from the throne of God and of the glorified Christ, the Lamb says, and of course the bride. The bride is the marriage is taking place. So the fulfillment of this picture in the prophetic application, spiritual interpretation, is yet future and will take place after the east gate had previously been closed, and it's going to be closed before the wedding. The wedding is going, and the water doesn't come forth until the wedding has taken place. Therefore, the kingdom blessings cannot really begin until the marriage takes place. The pure river of not only of truth, of knowledge to the world, but of life, of life. And it's not emphasizing the water of life that we get. That's another thing. We cannot confuse it with this. Try to make analogies of the waters that we partake of and then make it with the other. That is not the point in this particular application.
Did you say the waters we run out of the east gate?
Yeah. No, the water, see, it starts on the same, on the south side, but it's west, on the south side of the building, but it continues west to east, all the way up. It stays on one course.
From the altar.
Because here's the altar, and here's the temple, and it comes out on the right side of the temple, it comes through on the right side of the altar, and it goes out to the outside of the temple structure on the right side. When it comes out from under the threshold, in the fulfillment of it, the river of life of the bride and the lamb doesn't begin to issue forth from the throne until the marriage has taken place.
And at that time, it comes out the
east gate. It comes out the east gate, but not through the gate itself, but by the side, at the right side of the east gate. It comes from the right side of the temple, the right side of the altar, but not under the altar, not under the steps in front. It would mar the whole structure. You'd have with the steps, you'd have a flood. So it's at the side. And it would more or less, it doesn't say that it was that straight line, but it would have to be reasonably straight. Because there's a limited area that it can be before it be outside, before it has to go in a relatively straight line. But once it gets out, then other things happen. That's what we're telling you. We first have to start with the West. The source is the West, God, the throne, the land. It flows toward the East. And it comes out on the south side. Alright? When you think of the south side, you have to think of two things. Normally, it's south is what? Alright. Or you can say it another way. South is opposite of north. And in the favorable sense, when south is opposite north, in the favorable sense, it would then be the natural kingdom in contradistinction to the spiritual. It's of God because it says it comes from the temple. So this water applies to the world. It's the blessing to the world, restitution. These are really restitution blessings to the world and mankind. And therefore, it is on that side, and this is where it's coming down here. This river comes down here to this planet. I'm just using it in a broad sense. This is where it's coming down south here, instead of from the. It comes from the north from certain aspects, but not in this vision. Because this vision is identified not with the city, it's identified with the temple. So there are certain differences of description in the Bible. You have to first say, what are you talking about? We're talking about a temple, not the city. There are different significances in various ways. Now, the second verse.
The south side.
The earthly. It's the earthly. It's water of life directed to benefit mankind. It's the benefaction to mankind eventually. And the reason is that as we see more and more of the detail, it becomes confirmed and reconfirmed and reconfirmed by other applications, so that you know that the interpretation has to be within that, in that category. Verse 3 suggests it.
Going on each day for the line to the man measured 1,000 cubits and then led me through the water, and it was unfortunate.
You might as well read until it becomes the river.
Again he measured 1,000 and led me through the water, and it was easy. Again he measured 1,000 and led me through the water,
up to the mark. Again, he measured 1,000 and it was a river that I could not pass through. It was a deep
enough river.
A river that could not be
passed through.
All right. That passed through. What verse does that end
with?
Step 5. All right. See, the wording there is slightly different, but the same principle. Now, notice the four distinctions made here. There, the 1,000 cubits is mentioned four times, right? And the juncture points are described as what?
Ankle,
knee, loins, or hip. You might say hip to make it, you know, more understandable. And then the river, which means over one's head. So it's ankle deep, knee deep, waist deep, and then over your head. And not only over the head, but he couldn't finish the crossing before he passed over. He walked through it, and it was ankle deep. And he walked through it, and it was knee deep. So he waded the... Now the thing is this, too, that the further he went along, it not only got deeper, but it was wider. Now, the next thing is this. It was the 4,000 cubit mark where he couldn't go, and he had to stop because he couldn't finish it. Now, this is where it leads you to, this point. Before it continues with the vision. Now, the standard of the cubit in Ezekiel, vision, here's a confirmation of it. There are many confirmations of it, but this is a spiritual confirmation. If you say like 1,000 cubits, what does 1,000 cubits represent? Not inches, and it's not cubits in the tabernacle. You can get a spiritual symbolisms by using the cubit as a whole. The most holy was 10 cubits, and 10 squared is 100, and you can multiply it by 10, it's a cubit, 1,000, and say that's God. And the 10 of the holy is a double 10 or a double 100 or a double perfection from a justification standpoint, so forth. But this is, when it comes to the chronology aspect, chronology. It's feet, not inches, and not. Let's take the altar. The altar was how square? What? It was 5 cubits square, but which would be 20 cubits, the perimeter, right? 5 cubits square is plenty, but you change the cubits to the 18-inch cubit, and which is a foot and a half, the 20 becomes 30. And it's 30 years of age that Jesus laid down his life as the man Christ Jesus. That's the ransom. 30. And it's by translating the cubits first to inches and then dividing it by feet, making it into feet, changing it back into feet, that it has the chronological application of years. Now we come to this with Ezekiel's temple, and we find that if the 4,000 is the 4,000 cubits, what is 4,000 plus or multiply? 7,000. It's the tabernacle cubit is a foot and a half, which would make in this if it were translated. But this is not a tabernacle cubit. This is a cubit and a handspread. This is not an 18-inch cubit. It's a 21-inch cubit, and a 21-inch cubit is 1 3/4 feet. 1.75 times 4 is 700. Well, 7, but I'm just using the truncate. I'm just truncating without decimals. This is 7,000 feet. He measured 7,000 feet, and it was of such depth and velocity that he couldn't ford the river. Now, what's this remind you of, spiritually speaking? These are the rivers of truth. Well, yes, about the knowledge and so on. But the knowledge of the Lord will cover the earth as the waters cover the sea, like an unfathomable. And at the end of the millennial age, the light is to be sevenfold, that of the sun. In other words, the climax of life in the kingdom is at the end of the age. And at that time, no man can say, know the Lord, because all will know, because the resurrection will be of all will have taken place, at least the awakening, and their education and development and knowledge is such now that when it comes to the end of the millennium, that the water is just, the truth is so overwhelming, the scope of it, that you don't need teachers in the normal sense of the word, because all have then been taught. It's a matter then of obedience. Now the thing is this, this water originated from the throne. This does not mean that that the walking through the waters and all this, that all this has been taking place actually, but what has happened, this is from God sees things before they occur, as though they have occurred. And he is showing now Ezekiel these things, which point back to creation. And there's a 7,000 year period. We're now at the end of the millennial age, will be at the end of 7,000 years. Now, the water of promise, the truth, began in Eden. And it was a veiled promise that the seed of woman would eventually crush the serpent's head. There was also the indication of a possibility of life in that Adam was told that if he didn't eat of a certain tree, he would, by understanding, live forever. And in this garden that he had dressed. And presumably, as his progeny would increase and the garden's exterior extended, the possibility by one reasoning it out with that ultimately the whole earth would be perfected as his seed would multiply. But it didn't occur that, didn't happen that way. But the potentialities are inherently implied, except for the sinning. But God gave a ray of hope in that he suggested the possibility that this sin might be eradicated by the seed, the woman bruising the serpent's head, and